Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Rahul Astapa, this week with Athena Cableno, fantastic new comedian. If you haven't heard of her, please give it this a shot. Don't put in the comments that you haven't heard of her. It's redundant. You just look like a fool, okay? Just pretend you've heard of her. You'll look like a cool kid. Are you saying Rahul Astapa? That's another sign. If you enjoy these podcasts, please help us out by giving us some financial assistance. And you get lots of extras by going to gofasterstripe.com/badges, becoming a monthly badger, get a membership pack, a couple of badges, secret codes, extra emergency questions. You also get access to all the backstage interviews, other little bits and exciting pieces we're putting up in there for you. Some of my stand-up shows will go up every few months, different ones, for you to watch for no extra charge. You also get advance warning of the guests who are coming up in future episodes, so you can book ahead. It was all badgers who booked for Michael Palin. So on March the 9th at the Leicester Square Theatre, we are doing lots more. Why not book for those gigs? Richard.com/gigs. Right. Now it is time to listen to Rahul Astapa, or watch it if you are watching it. So I am going to go. Enjoy the podcast. Here it comes. Rahul Astapa. Rahul Astapa.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just been imagining throwing his children down some stairs. It's Richard Herring.
Oh, yeah. Hello. Hello. You're much better than last week's audience. They're pricks. They're pricks. So, welcome to Richard Herring's lovingly smeared toothpastey penis. Don't usually let the P stand for anything other than podcast, but I had to today. You've got to have come up with new ideas. It's just ways of smearing toothpaste on genitals. That's all the podcast will be from now on. Didn't pre-warn the guest. But
I was hanging out with the Thundercats the other day. Just my luck, I was stuck between Lynxo and Snarf. I hate Snarf. They call it Rahulastabah. Let's have a little look to who's down here in the audience. That's a new gentleman I don't recognise. What's your name, sir?
It's Patrick.
Patrick, have you been here before?
I haven't.
No, what brought you here the first time?
I've been watching you for years.
Have you? Oh dear, you're that guy. I moved to get away from you.
In Hartford.
You do, okay. And what do you do for a living, Patrick?
I work with adults with learning disabilities.
Do you? Oh, that's difficult for me to take the piss out of. Thanks a lot. He works with adults with learning disabilities, so it's pretty good. Thank you for coming. There's a bald gentleman here. What's your name, sir?
Peter,
how are you doing? Have I talked to you before, Peter? Yeah, I recognise that, Peter. Remind me what you do for a living. It's IT, isn't it, Peter? Is you work in a bank, yeah. How's that going? Any good money come in recently? Yeah. When those 50p's come in that have got like Kew Gardens on the back and stuff, do you put those in the ones that are worth like 100 quid? Do you take those out and keep those?
If I saw one.
Yeah, if you saw one, you'd do it. You'd take it, wouldn't you? Yeah. Keep your eyes out. Keep your eyes open for that. That's what I'd do if I worked in a bank. So, nice to see you again. We filled a bit of time and that's all we were here to... That's all contractually we had to do. But thank you. Thanks for coming along, Patrick. Nice to see you. So my guest this week is probably best known for her appearance on Girl on Girl, which I'm guessing is not going to be what I'm hoping it is. But it might be. Will you please welcome Athena Coplenu, ladies and gentlemen. Sit down. Pull up a microphone. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
What was Girl on Girl? Remind me what
Do you want it to be?
I want it to be a serious feminist talk between two ladies.
Well, have I got a juicy story for you?
Okay.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah, it was an interview I did with a YouTuber. Right. You know who they are?
Yeah, I've heard of these kids. Yeah.
And it was great. And I'm old. Ish. I'm 38. I'll be 38 next month. And I met this young woman called Hannah Witten. She's like this incredibly intelligent millennial, early 20s, and she was great. And she was willing to school me and also willing to listen to me speak and be educated. And it was wonderful. And I recommend finding Hannah Witten if you want to. Is that her name?
Yeah, I think it is. You are getting old. That's what I'm like.
I'm getting old. Yeah.
I think a lot of men will be finding that by accident.
That's why it's got so many hits. To be honest, it's not feminist discussion. It's girl on girl. Oh no, somebody's talking about working whilst having children.
Yeah.
Oh, not quite the same thing.
Well, it's probably good to get those guys and girls who want to see that. It's not only guys who want to see that. Not only 52-year-old men who want to see that. There's other people.
Some girls want girls on girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty... If you're old, then I'm very old.
Really?
38's nice. A good age.
Is it a good age?
Yeah.
We were talking about this backstage about our kids. Yeah. It's a good age. I mean, I think my daughter's a good age. She's one, because you can hang her upside down. Like when you've caught a marlin, you know? You can just sort of do that, and she finds it hilarious. I use both legs. It's got the mic in the other hand. I don't just dangle around that. But she loves it. She's like, I'm upside down. And I'm 38, and I wouldn't enjoy that. So maybe I'm not such a great age.
I would enjoy it. Most of the things that my kids get to do, I really wish I could do.
Really?
Yeah, like be wheeled around in a pram. Like just being one of a bouncy thing.
Yeah,
have a nappy. I'd just like to have a nappy, which might come anyway.
Oh, yeah. But that's what I'm seeing. So this is going to sound terrible, but I'm looking at my daughter and I'm looking at maybe older people in my life and I'm thinking lots of similarities. Kids walk around with like a little walker, right? That's how they learn. And when you get older, you've got a Zimmer frame, you know, and obviously you've got incontinence, as it is referred to. So it's just life's a circle. We've got all that to look forward to, which is great because you don't remember it. I would love to remember being a baby, but you can't. So you just get to be a baby again.
And then you don't remember when you're old because you forget everything. So. Someone is trying to stop us remembering the good times that we have at the beginning and the end.
We just remember the paying taxes part. Yeah. How annoying.
Yeah. When they get older, they start doing... My daughter can do clean crap. She did this thing where she went upside... My wife held her upside down. She went right against, like, a plank. And then I can't even describe what she did. It was incredible. It's unbelievable. She's grown into this.
There's a case file being opened right now for social services. A plank.
Well, she was. I thought she would spit. She used to kind of, you put her upside down and then she put her hands down and spin round.
Right.
But she went. She went like flat upside down. So I can't even describe
they're
it.
Very
it was.
Bendy.
It was. It was
they're
amazing.
Bendy and bouncy.
She hates me, my daughter. she did a song. She borrowed my phone the other day. I could put this on.
And I won't do because it's my daughter. But she borrowed my phone, so I'm going to make a video, and then she made a video going, I love mummy, I love mummy, I love mummy, I hate Richard, I hate Richard. Which is like doubly bad, not even to call me daddy.
But the thing, you know, so your daughter basically trolled you.
She did. And then she went, and I love Rory, which is the little boy just come around. I love Matthew. I love everyone at my school. I hate Richard. So the,
as a comedian, you must understand the escalation is...
I know, which is... It's mostly...
I love the butcher.
Mostly a joke, but then she does mean it as well. So I don't know what I've done. I'm really nice to her. She can see the weakness in me. It's what women have done to me my whole life.
Really?
She can see...
I don't know. I don't know what to say. Other than the fact that when she realizes, like, basically, I was gonna say something awful. Like, just
say it.
When she's older, she'll love your credit cards. So just give her your wallet, and apparently, kids just love that. So just wait until she's old enough to want Air Force Ones and stuff.
Okay, buy those. She's already. There's no teenage. There's no childhood. She's a teenager already.
Oh, is that how it is? Yeah. Oh, 2 years old.
Yeah. Well, she's four. The baby's two. She's four.
So she's four.
She's
me.
Going on five. Yeah. Anyway, let's not just talk about our kids. People love that. I tell you, some people, the people who don't have kids at home love that. And every time they say, don't talk about your kids, I think, I'll just talk about my kids a bit longer just to annoy you. So there isn't that much about you online. I've been watching your videos, very funny stuff. You've been doing stand-up for a few years.
Yeah, so what I say is I've been doing it for about 6 or 7 years. Yeah. So I started in 2012 and I started properly in 2013, but I've only been good for about 4 of those years.
Okay.
There were some dark years, which unfortunately you can find online if you're that way. If you are really into... It's in the dark web, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I've only been good since about 2015, 16-ish.
Okay. You know, in another 10 years... I mean, I constantly look back at everything I've done and go, oh, I was terrible. And then I go, oh, now I'm funny. And then 10 years past, I go, no, I wasn't funny. Now I'm funny.
It's a constant state of, like... loving and self-loathing, that circle, isn't it? It doesn't go away. But I genuinely was shit when I started.
But everyone is. Lying. So what were you doing before? Because I haven't managed to find out what you were doing before you became a comedian.
Before I became a comedian, I did all kinds of things. I was broadly in what you would call in project management.
Okay.
So I used to work in sustainability, so I know a lot about waste and rubbish and recycling. Okay. Just so you know, I was into climate change before it was sexy. Like, and there might be about 10, 15 years ago, do you remember when Al Gore made An Inconvenient Truth?
I do.
Right, so we were talking about all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Back then, so I was in that industry getting people to, like, recycle and use green energy and use reusable nappies and throw away less stuff back then, but no one listened. Possibly because I'm not white and 16 years old. I don't know. possibly might have something to do with it. But I was in that industry for a little while, and then I went into. I was like, do you really want to know? This is very LinkedIn.
I like to know what. But also because you've come to comedy a lot of people come to comedy like at 20 now.
Yeah, I started a bit later.
So you started a bit later, which I think is interesting, and I prefer it because I started straight away as well. So I'm a hypocrite, but. I think it's good for comedians to have had a life before they become.
I'd have been a terrible comedian if I started when I was 21. I had a terrible lifestyle. I was drinking a lot, and I was cripplingly shy.
Right.
Very low self-esteem. So I'd have been one of those awful comedians, like asking the audience to fill in the holes in their life that shouldn't be filled in by parenting and good relationships.
It sounds very much like what I was like at 21, to be fair. And I just gave it a go.
But I think the comedy climate was different back then. In the recent era when you started, then but I think there was a slightly smaller scene, so you could find your feet and you can a bit. Whereas now, if you start and you're not very good, you get lost very quickly because it's very tidal. Lots of comedians that can swell you up. But anyway, I started quite late. So project manager, sustainability, worked in transport. I did had a lovely job. My best job ever. I worked for the Olympics.
Wow. Okay.
Because I used to work in planning. I had a lot of jobs. Do you really want to know about this?
I want to know about the Olympics. Frank Cottrell Boyce is coming on, who wrote the opening ceremony of the 2012 Olympics. He's one of my guests in Liverpool.
And I got to watch that and the practice. I got to watch loads of it. I met Denise Lewis on my first day. I was literally like in a car with her, and she was like my all-time idol. And I was just sweating, going, ah! I met Ed Moses, if anyone likes athletics. Ed Moses is like a big hero. I love athletics.
Yeah.
So on my first day, I was like, this is going to change my life. And it didn't, because it finished, and then we got made redundant. And that was... that was the end of it.
And then Britain changed into something that wasn't like
exactly.
the opening.
Exactly, it was just like a full storm. And what the sad thing is, in those days, I was still a little bit shy and I didn't have a camera phone. So all these memories, I have no pictures. I met Mark Foster and he bent over and I could see his butt crack. I had no camera phone.
Imagine if you could have got a photo of that.
Yeah. So I had loads of experiences there, and then what did I do after that? Worked in civil engineering after that. And I won't lie, I'll be honest, I still do part-time consultancy.
Okay.
Yeah, because comedy is not paying my bills, Richard. It's very annoying, but I think that's the way of the world at the moment. You've got to have side hustles.
You're doing well. You've won some competitions.
I have almost won some competitions, but I've got far enough. But that was actually, I did the BBC New Comedy Awards final, and that's where I got my act together and was like, Athena, you do have a talent here. Stop being an idiot and start believing in yourself and start carrying yourself like someone you can write a joke and something to say. So it was a wonderful experience for me, and I wish I'd enjoyed it more actually.
It's difficult to enjoy those things. What was the impetus that made you try comedy out though?
I wanted to make money.
Well, that's not sensible. You had a proper job, so, you could have made money.
And that's very true. So my problem was, when I started, I wasn't au fait enough with the live scene. I was a fan of American stand-up. So my favourite comedian was Wanda Sykes. I loved Bernie Mac. I loved Whoopi Goldberg. In the UK, I loved Gina Yashaway. So a lot of black comics. And I watched a lot of comedy on TV. But I didn't understand about the open mic circuit. And I just thought, do comedy, I'll be really funny, and then I'll play the Hackney Empire. Because I didn't know there was something beneath the Hackney Empire. Do you know what I mean? Okay, I didn't know there were pubs you could comedy in. But what happened was, I got enough good feedback from those pub gigs to say, okay, Athena, this isn't earning you money now, but in 30 years' time it might earn you money. So you get a little bit of encouragement. And then I started doing this thing where I thought, okay, every year I'll set myself a couple of goals. If I meet them, I'll keep going. Yeah. And if I don't meet them, knock it on the head and go back to your day rate. And every year I have subsequently met, they're modest goals, stuff like competition final, perform, tour support, like really modest things that you do.
Beyond Rahulastapa.
Exactly, and to be honest, that's it. Rest of the year,
that's
I'm taking
it,
off.
Yes, give up.
That's
give
it, up. Yeah.
I'd just retire now on a high.
I should retire.
I mean, I should retire. I would if it was me.
And can I inherit this podcast?
Can you what?
Can I inherit it? And then whatever.
I was going to give it to Russell Howe because he's got the same initials. No, so it's an easy transition. But he's doing quite well still.
Oh, look, white guy inherited. What a surprise. Yeah, nepotism. Still going strong. Don't worry about that.
And I was going to ask you, do you, with your baby, use sustainable nappies now that you're...
But do you know something? Like, I don't.
And it is
a regret of mine that I don't, because I know loads about them and how they work, and they're fantastic, especially if you breastfeed, because if you breastfeed, you know they only poo like once a week.
Right.
So it's true. Like, you guys know this, right? If you breastfeed a baby when they're really young, they literally poo every few days. So you don't need disposable nappies. You just use it like a flannel, catch the water. Everyone's laughing like I'm making this up. It's like, babies pee once a week. But anyway, I don't, and it's a regret of mine. But
not so much of a regret that you're doing the other system. Hard, isn't it? That's the thing. I think I feel like, oh god, it's such a waste, all these nappies. But it's too much. I can't.
Do you know what's hard?
I'm not just start boiling nappies.
Just being asked to buy them in the first place is hard. Like, I just couldn't be bothered. And then it's so easy to get a pack of nappies in the supermarket.
It is. And that is why the planet Earth is doomed.
I'll tell you what needs to happen. Rihanna needs to come up with a brand of reusable nappies. And then, you know, because when people like Rihanna do stuff, we all follow. Or Greta Thunberg needs to have a teenage pregnancy. And then... and then start using reusable nappies. And then be like, oh my god, man, she'll make teenage pregnancy cool. Like, go on, girl, get pregnant like Greta, you lazy cow. But anyway, they are great. I regret not using them, but I'm not using them.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
But everyone else should use them, not you and me, though.
Do as I say, not as I do.
I'm not going to do it either, but I've got an electric car, so.
Oh, yeah, batteries, the Congo. Let's talk about that.
Okay. And I've got a diesel car as well. I've got two cars. But...
and he's got a landfill site, everybody. Throw nappies away because he makes money. £100 a tonne waste. Yeah. Did you know that?
Is it?
Yeah, that's how we used to work in sustainability.
You did?
Yeah. And that was back in like 2005, 2006, so it's probably gone up now.
Yeah.
Because space is at premium.
Well, you know, maybe that's how we can work post-Brexit. Just start selling off land for dumping stuff in.
Yeah, it's all... Well, I was going to say it's all Britain's going to be good for, but actually, yeah, it's not a joke. It might, actually, that might be the only thing we have to offer. Ooh, bit grass.
Terrible thing. Right, yeah. I'm going to ask you some emergency questions.
Excellent.
I'm going to ask you, first of all, Davy John's emergency question. Who is the most famous person you've been in a lift with that you hadn't got into the lift with?
That I haven't got into the lift with.
You didn't get in with, you got in the lift and there they were. I was in a lift with Billy Connolly. David Johnson was in a lift with Noel Edmonds, who's very small, and Woody Allen as well. He's been in a lift.
All right, so I've got an actual story and an almost story.
Okay.
So I'll give you both. So the actual story is Gary Lineker at the BBC, because he works there.
Yeah.
I was faffing.
That's a good place to go in the lifts.
I wasn't like following him. Like,
no.
And he wasn't,
no one said you were, but now you said that, I'm suspicious.
And so that was cool, because I'm actually a fan of his tweeting.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, boring footballer, really. come on, guys. I mean, he was functional.
He scored loads of goals.
Functional. He was a striker. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's
like Van Nistelrooy.
That is great. The function, though.
Yeah, if you support the team he plays for, you'll love him. But if you don't, you're not, I want to go out to be Gary Lineker. No one wants to think that. Come on. Sorry, Gary. You might want to cut this out afterwards.
No, I
feel like I'm offending everybody. Who am I thinking? Drogba, on the other hand. You know, that's flair. Do you know what I mean? Goals and flair. See what I'm saying?
Okay.
Anyway, so but I didn't say this to him in the lift, by the way. Like, you want to watch some of Drogba's goals. Do you know what I mean? Speed and flair. What did you have, goal hanger? Anyway. Anyway, the almost story, right? When I was working for the Olympics, I was based in Canary Wharf. Now, this starts off as a sad story. The company above us or below us, I forget, lost a lot of people in 9/11. They had an office in the Twin Towers. However, as a consequence, every year they do a charity event. And in this charity event, celebrities would man their phones and sell stocks and trades. I think one of the celebrities one year was Prince Harry.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have it on good authority. In fact, I know for a fact he was in the building below me at the same time as me because he was on the news. So I was watching the news and I'm like, this is happening now! Beneath us! Oh my God! This is the greatest job ever! It's going to change my life! And it didn't, obviously. But he would have gotten a lift to get to that.
Could have been you.
Floor. And it might have been the lift I used. Yeah. And it could have been me.
Could have been you.
It could have been me. Could you imagine? Because they lost their shit and the mum had dreadlocks. With me? Oh, no, I don't think that would have flown at all. No, they wouldn't have handled that. They can barely handle the mother.
Oh, that would have been good. Something I was going to say, it's gone. Don't have kids is my advice, because I had something great to say to you then. And it's
the wedding would have been great, though.
Yeah.
Me and Harry, they had a very black American wedding.
Yeah.
Mine would have been like a black British wedding. Benjamin, Jeff and I are saying, just rejecting the OBE again. It would have been great.
All right, I'll give you another emergency question. And this is... that one nearly came up. I was trying to do this backstage with you. Which non-potato crisp is the best?
Which non-potato? Oh, yeah. Plantain chips.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, did we all... I don't know if we caught the drama plantain chips. Anyone watches Twitter and arguments online, basically, plantain chips are enjoyed in equatorial countries all over the world, right? Plantain is a big banana. You fry it, you make chips out of it. About 3 weeks ago, a company owned by two white people invented plantain chips.
Right.
Again, submitted them to the vegan awards. There's a vegan awards for innovation, and they won.
Okay.
And I had time that day, right? So I just was tweeting like, Matt, this is ludicrous, okay? Because I personally have a problem with vegan food that is like fruit and vegetables. It's a vegetable. You can't. Don't tell me. Oh, I'm eating a vegan apple. Really? Do you normally deep fry your apples in lard? Do you? And second of all, like, you can go. There's a wider issue here, which is serious. Like, you can go to any corner shop in any part of London or any city in the UK, and you can buy a packet of plantain chips for £1, and you can give money to a local grocer, and you can give money to what will probably be a black-owned company, because a lot of the countries that make plantain chips are black-owned. But instead, if you want to give £3 to a company owned by two white people, you want a gap year to Ecuador, which is what they did.
Right.
And they were like, this was delicious! Mmm! How come you never had it? Because you've never gone to a black-owned shop in your area to see what we eat, you know? And then, so the audacity of it, I've even forgotten the question.
It doesn't matter,
so
it's your favourite non-Christian.
Yeah,
but that's the only time
chips,
like a white person's gone to a black country and taken their stuff.
Revolutionary.
It's a one-off. It's a one-off.
In fact, it worked out so well for them, you want to try it.
I'm going to go across, see what else is going on.
What have I started?
So your heritage, you're from London.
I'm from London.
Your heritage is Ghanaian and Indo-Caribbean.
That's
so
correct.
Is that
yeah.
Indian and Caribbean.
So my mum is of Indian heritage. So the Caribbean is like half Indian.
Okay.
Yeah. Most countries: Guyana, Trinidad, a bit of Jamaica. Huge Indian population. So that's where my mum comes from.
Okay.
Because so Africans were slaves and the Indians were indentured labourers.
Yeah.
So basically slaves, but given like a pat on the back.
Yeah.
Well done. But yeah, different but similar.
Yeah. When did they come to would they come to England together, or were
my
they,
parents?
Yeah,
were no, they met in Newcastle.
Did they?
So yeah, so they came. So my dad was studying in Ghana in the Newcastle Poly, which is now Northumberland University, I think. And my mum came over with her family because her family was studying. So one of her uncles became a doctor, gynecologist, another one's a pharmacist. But in those days, Guyanese Indian families, and by extension a lot of Indian families, very patriarchal. So the men became like businessmen and doctors, and the women were expected to be nurses and carers and stuff. And so my mum met my dad, and she married my dad against my family's wishes, because there's quite a lot of racism in Guyanese society, but we know about that, so I won't go into it and describe racism. That's how they met. And then my mum and my dad subsequently went to live in Ghana for a few years, and they had my brother. Then they came back to the UK, and a few years after that, I was born with another baby because I'm a twin.
Are you? Yes. Oh, okay.
Do you want to hear a really cool thing?
Yeah.
So
you're psychic.
Do you know something? I'm going to say something cooler than that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had a baby last year, right? And my brother's girlfriend had his baby on the same day.
Wow.
So we've got twin cousins. Isn't that fucking outrageous? Because when you think about it, it's when you work backwards, it can make you feel a bit sick. Like, when you said, are you psychic, actually? I don't like...
Well, if he's doing it, I'm going to do it.
You know what I mean? Like when brothers don't insist, siblings like, oh, I want, how come he gets to, well, there we go. So how come he gets to do that? I want to do it. So, but that's lovely. So we've got twin cousins, and I gave my daughter, it's so cute. So he has a daughter who has my name as her middle name. I don't often cry, but that made me cry. And my daughter has a middle name, which is Atowo, which is in my Ghanaian nation, it means female twin.
Okay.
So she has a female twin, even though it's her cousin.
That's amazing. And you went back to Ghana.
Several times. I'm going back in January too, but I've been back,
Did you have a kind of... I read something about you going back and it not being...
You were very well researched.
I've tried my best. It's hard to find stuff about you. You're very sick. I didn't know you were twins. So that's blown my mind.
Yeah.
So you went, you went back to try and find your roots first time, I guess.
The first time I went, I was 18 and I went over with my dad, and it was a really interesting experience because... my dad went back and forth, so I grew up really with my mum, and I always felt Ghanaian, but I didn't speak the language. But something extraordinary happened. I got served food whilst I was there, and I was like, oh, I eat this food at home. It hadn't occurred to me that my food was Ghanaian, because my mum cooked it all the time.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I eat this too! Then I was like, wow, this is crazy. First of all, how integrated my mum was, because she lived there for so long, but secondly, how... if no one says something to you, it doesn't occur to you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a question of finding myself. I guess it was a question of you want to go back to where you come from and you know it's such an integral part of your identity. Because when you're black or non-white in this country, you just know it the whole time.
Yeah.
You know it because people are getting a wall of plantain chips when you eat them, like, all the time. And so it was... But lots of strange things happened on that trip. I went with, like, natural Afro hair. And when I got there, one of the first things that my dad did was straighten my hair. Isn't that hilarious? I went back to Ghana. And then this was back in 1999, and he said, oh, you've come a little girl and you leave a woman, right? But look how things changed. About 12 years later, I went back to Ghana with an Afro, and he was, oh, look at my daughter with her natural hair. She's free from my European shackles. And it's just like, you know, it's amazing how things change. And it showed you something about colonialism, what it does to the legacy, you know, because Ghana was the first country to become independent, and I'm there in a salon with my hair getting straightened, you know? So it just goes to show it will take centuries to really unlearn the things that we learned from that. But it was great, and Ghana's a beautiful country. I always say, if you want to go to Africa, which is a huge continent, and we should stop talking about it pejoratively, if you do want to go to Africa, Ghana's a great place to start. English-speaking, small population, only about 25 million people, so it's not like, you know, it's not so big, it's hard to grasp. Beautiful scenery, lots of history, lovely coastline, lots to do, elephants in the north.
Okay. No, I was going to go to the south.
Oh, duh. The south just has...
What animals are in the south?
Chickens.
Okay, that's goats. Good. African chickens, though.
Tasty chickens. I don't eat meat anymore, but one of the most delicious things I'll always remember was the first time I ate chicken in Ghana, and I crunched the bone, and the bone was hard. And because I'd only ever eaten British supermarket chickens for $2.99, I'd never had a chicken that had been raised in someone's garden and then slaughtered and eaten. And it's just... Our food culture is so corrupted by capitalism. We just eat cheap food that is manufactured to satiate us and not to like give us health and nutrition.
Sure.
To eat this, it was like this bone. Right. I'm telling you, it was delicious. And I was like, amazing. Yeah. So the food's great, and there's elephants, and it's you should go.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite sunny.
Very sunny.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I'm going. Yeah. That's good. That's pretty good.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So let's talk about your show. You've done a couple of Edinburgh shows.
I have done a couple of Edinburgh shows.
What,
yeah.
So what you did, one called KMT.
Yeah.
Kiss My Teeth.
Kiss My Teeth. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Can you not? Everyone can do it. Everyone.
No, I'm not allowed.
You're not allowed. It's not appropriation. You can do it. Okay. In fact, I welcome people to do it in my show. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great gesture. So,
doesn't sound so disapproving when I do
it. I was going to say, it sounds quite flirtatious when you do it. It sounds far too flirtatious. Okay. It was... it's supposed to be like, oh, God. But, you know, to deviate a little bit, there was a lot of noise being made a few years ago about catcalling, and that's correct noise. Women shouldn't be shouted at in the street. However, in different cultures, oral communication to strangers is how you communicate. So, for example, kissing your teeth is a very normal thing to do in African and Caribbean things. So you might walk down the street and hear this. But culturally, that's not that offensive. You're literally expressing, I'm annoyed, I'm upset. And that's true for lots of reasons. Like, you might, in Ghana, you might hear a lot of kissing. It's normal. It's not harassment. And I think we forget in Europe that we're very reserved people. And we're like... You know, like this, we like to be a little bit, not make noises and stuff. So Kiss My Teeth was my way of saying, this is how I feel about the world, and it can mostly be summed up by a noise that is heard in my household all the time. I think at the time, when I did that show a year after the referendum, when Theresa May called the election, and I was like, oh, kiss my fucking teeth, Jesus, I can't deal with it.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And then... and then the other show is about leadership.
Yes, it was about... It was called Follow the Leader.
Follow the Leader.
And it was about how, as a younger person, believe it or not, I always wanted to get into politics.
Yeah.
And I always thought, wouldn't it be great if I could make a positive change to my community in this country and maybe even further afield by just understanding how structures work and working within them? And then what happened was I did a job where I got done for gross misconduct. This was before I became a stand-up. And basically... I always had this excess energy, and I was putting that energy, rather than going onto stage and speaking into microphones, I was saying what I should have been saying on stage in emails.
Okay.
And quite a lot of these emails, and they were good. This company, I won't name it, but it was a, it was a government department, and they noticed I was sending these emails, and they watched these emails for 18 months. Could you imagine how many emails? It was like during the kind of they do this like trial thing. The pile of it, there were so many emails, the printer ran out of paper. When that and the hearing lasted like all day, and it was just. Oh, it was awful. So I thought I can't really become a politician now because all that stuff exists somewhere.
What was in the emails?
Oh, I'll tell you. I mean, awful stuff. So I was very sexually explicit when discussing things of that nature with my girlfriends.
Okay.
So things happened in cars that, and those experiences were documented.
Okay.
Shall we say? what else happened? I actually did a bit of stand-up on it because it was once I'd recovered from it all. What else did I do?
Was it just because you were using your work email?
It was just because I was using my work email, yeah. And the funny thing was...
Because you're allowed to write about those things.
You can in your text messages, in your Gmail, in your Hotmail, even in your Yahoo, guys. You can use, even in your Lycos mail, you can use all of your emails.
It's interesting they waited 18 months is all I'm saying. They said, this stuff's quite good. Let's see how it plays out. Then we'll print it all up.
That was the thing that bothered me the most. If you've seen I'm doing it, show me, sack me or whatever. Yeah. But the funny thing was, I didn't get sacked because all of they pulled up basically a whole load of emails. I had to go through every line that was where the words were inappropriate. And just for the record, you know, there were different equality groups like race, disability, sexuality. I had offensive words for all of them. Literally, they done me on all of them. And when I said, this is going to sound awful, but I'll give you an example. So I had a friend who was gay and I referred to her as Muff Muncher affectionately.
Yeah.
Okay. Affectionately. And obviously, if you have a friend and you can talk to them like that, that's fine. But in the in the black and white print, in Arial 12, it doesn't... It's not very affectionate, you know? It's like, and they were like, why did you say it? It's like, she's a lesbian, she's love. That's what I had to say. And it was a very long day, Richard. and I called, I'll tell you one story. I called, and this is one thing I do regret. I don't use this language anymore, but I called... a famous black celebrity, a coconut, and if you don't know what it is, brown on the outside, white on the inside. Basically, what he'd done was he went to Kenya on a comic relief trip, and he burst into tears, and he was like, this is awful, and I feel it more because I'm from Ghana, and my life could have been like this. And I was like, well, not really, because you're from Ghana, innit? And Ghana's all right. And you're in a part of Kenya that's not nice, but there's a bit of Kenya that's really nice, you know? And I had a great joke about African countries being like Wetherspoons is, like, because sometimes you go into a shit one, but there were some nice ones. You know, right off, you just go, this is a shit Wetherspoons, but you'll still go to the other Wetherspoons that's really nice, which is a great joke. but, you know, I had to sit there and you know, why you call him coconut? I'm like, well, he should be representing where he comes. If I can't rely on him to talk about Africa in a proper way, well, who can I rely on? And all this stuff. So, but you know, so language like that. So luckily I could justify everything, but there was a lot of justifying. And, and quite right, and I honestly know for a fact that if I was white, I'd have been sacked. But then if I was white, I would have had no excuse to use a lot of that language anyway.
Sure.
And I genuinely think that they kept me because I could use pivot tables and no one else. At the time, like, I knew how to use Access and pivot tables and stuff. And, you know, they were like, you know, on the one hand, it's outrageous use and flagrant disregarding of our email policy. But you're very good with, you know, with the analysing survey results and whatever I was doing. But, yeah, that meant I couldn't get into politics. Or I became fearful because I was like, this is in my legacy. And, and I contemplated that in my show, like, the people who... I should be in politics. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I should be. I'm thoughtful. I care about people. I'm interested in progressiveness. I'm not interested in left or right. I'm interested in solutions. But I've opted out of it because of my past. And yet people like Boris Johnson and, you know, lots of other individuals... And you may support him and that's fine. That's your democratic right.
They don't.
But, oh, you don't. Excellent. Great. Let's get into it. But this is one of the real shames about politics. We don't judge people. We should be judging people based on what they do and what they believe in and who they help. But we have a weird way of judging some people based on their character. Now, if we honestly judged people based on character, half these politicians would not have the jobs that they have. you know, because they are very clear about the kind of character that they do have, but we don't. We judge people based on whether or not they're going to tax us less, for example, whether or not they have a go at immigrants, and things like that. So the show was basically about me being an idiot, but saying, but look at all these sensible things I've got to say. So can you reconcile the fact that I got pregnant by accident with the fact that I can talk to you about Jeremy Corbyn in an honest way? And just to show that you don't have to be a very sensible person in your personal life to be sensible in your political life.
But I think do you not think you would be able, you'd be forgiven that? I mean, if Boris Johnson's got away with
what
he's got
away
with.
You emails, you know.
but if it's been investigated, I think in a way, like when people have a secret and it hasn't been investigated and it comes up 10 years later, then it's a big problem. But if it's been investigated and it's been passed, you know, and it's been decided on, I don't think that's necessarily... sound that bad to me. You're a young person and you're right about sex.
You're actually... You know what? I was 29, 30 when that happened. Yeah. And then I started comedy at 31 because I knew I had to do something with this brain. I was like, if I'm going to get into prison if I don't sort this out. If it wasn't the Nazi dog man, it would have been me doing something awful. Putting my cat in white face or something. I don't know. There's something really pro-black. But, that lime is dangerous. The Victorians. Because they all died or something because they used to put lime in their face. I know, I digress. I've even forgotten the tangent I was... Oh, yeah, could I... The left... People on the left are always judged more harshly, aren't they? Yeah. Because mud doesn't stick to people on the right. Because they walk around saying, I'm a prick. Oh, I am a prick, you know? It's proven. But when you're on the left, there's a tendency to be very pious, and that means you get punished more for the mistakes that you make. And also, you know, we don't control the press, obviously, so the stuff that could... affect your public perception gets amplified, which is a shame. I could do it, but...
I think also, people on the left admit they did something and apologise and then they're in trouble, where people on the right, it seems, just keep on either deflecting or just saying it didn't happen and then it eventually goes away. I think, even, you know, with Trump, maybe it's not going to... But you people at home, it may be different for you in the future, but he basically just keeps on deflecting it and it goes away and then he does... Then another thing happens and he can keep on deflecting it.
It's quite... Trump is quite incredible, and I think a lot about why he is where he is. And similar to Boris Johnson, I think a lot about why he is where he is, because failing upwards is a wonderful phenomenon. It's fascinating to me, and I've decided that basically, and it's going to sound a bit deep, so don't get frightened, front row, right? And don't congratulate yourself either, because what I'm going to say is a bit odd. I think white supremacy won. They fought a social, cultural, and economic war against non-white peoples. And they won, and they created an environment that basically means a certain white person will just always be rewarded, right? So Donald Trump is a great example. He's really unqualified for his job. He's horrifically bad at it. He has done nothing, I think, to justify his... not one thing. I can't think of one thing he's done or said or enacted, yet he is... Where he is, so at some point we have to say, that's a very good structure, white supremacy bill, because it sucks up the worst of you and puts you up there, right? And that doesn't work for anybody else, anyone. And it's structured. They're going to impeach him for some random phone call he made to a guy in the Ukraine. Out of everything this man has done, the only thing we can pin on him is some very esoteric thing. I can't even understand it. I'm into politics. That's the only thing you can pin on this man. Yeah. The only shit that will stick. So that's the success, isn't it? That's what's happened. We've created a system. I'll talk about America because that's very prominent at the moment. But they keep executing black people. They keep doing it.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, a man, it was a black man, he called the police because his neighbour, who's a black woman, her doors were open and he was worried about her. So he called the police to protect her. And the police shot this woman through her window. She was playing video games, couldn't hear the police calling her. Some police officer looked through the window, saw something happening. She was just playing video games, shot her dead. Okay. And that police officer just handed his notice. Will he go to jail? Don't know. Will anything happen? Don't know. Well, something else happened. So this is all structural. Do you know what I mean? This is a structural success of white supremacy. And the only thing that's going to get rid of it or dismantle it is white people themselves going, yo, I don't want to be a judge anymore. I don't want to be part of the system. Or white police officers going, I don't want to be a police officer anymore. You know, and that's never going to happen because the structure is so great. It's very hard to understand when you're part of it. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, yeah. I agree with you. I would say that if, like, a... civilization, if the worst people rise to the top and the most and are incompetent, then eventually that civilization will crumble and fall, and then anything could happen. Then anything.
That's exactly, and that's so, kind of the way we're going, actually, yeah. Because that's what will happen. It's in the UK. It's happening. Yeah. You know, eventually, you know, our currency will be so devalued. Our young people don't aspire to own property anymore. They don't aspire to do it. They're like, they don't even aspire to have a career. They're just doing odd jobs, or they're into side hustles now. Yeah. They want Instagram themselves because they know their degrees. There's a limited pool of jobs for them to go for. So this is happening before our eyes. We, you know, the opportunities that I had are not there for young people anymore. I know when I left uni, you could go to a council and get a job picking up phones. You can't do that anymore because everything's done online now, right? Yeah. So we're seeing that happening before our eyes. And if you look at other countries, like emerging economies, so, you know, China, Asia, you know, Brazil, South America, African countries, we're starting to see a shift. So until, like, the only thing that will save white people, the only thing that will save you is a rejection of this ludicrous idea of entitlement. Yeah. You know, just like when someone stands up and says, make America great again, say, it was never great. That's what you've got to say. But know what, see how Donald Trump can fill up an arena of 20,000 people by saying, let's make us America great again.
Yeah, I'm not 100% behind what I'm saying here. Is it partly like the sort of death throes of that old system that old guard? And it's a lot of older people, I think, supporting Trump and Brexit.
There are younger people too.
There are younger people as well, but it's like proportionally it's a lot of older people. And is it just them attempting to hold on to the thing they imagine was great? I mean, the irony is it's not good for most of those white people.
It's young people walking into schools and shooting them up.
Yeah.
You know, like, we do talk a lot about old people and, you know, they don't know any better. It's not, I don't buy that at all. I think there were, the new kind of white supremacist movement, so young people, if you look at who's getting arrested, look at Tommy Robinson, his followers are young white men. You can Google it, look at the protests that they do, the pro-Brexit protests and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's young white men, so I think we shouldn't neglect the fact that people are buying into this. And sadly, young people are more likely to buy into, to be groomed, you know? I don't wholly buy the generational argument that, oh, eventually they will die. And also, like, they'll live till 80, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's a long
but
time.
It's not necessarily they'll die, I just think it's that, I think, like, it feels like people are grabbing onto old ideas. Like, in the UK, both sides, left and right, are grabbing onto old ideas in the hope that going backwards will somehow help us.
Yeah.
And I don't think it will, because, you know, all those other markets you're talking about in Asia and, you know, Brazil, China, everywhere, they're going to become dominant. But if we don't allow ourselves to be, you know, if we're looking backwards and if we're isolating ourselves, we're going to be nothing here.
You're absolutely right. We're going back to protectionism, which is something we rejected in the 30s. We knew that that was not economically viable. That's why we conquered the world. Do you know what I mean? That we knew protectionism wouldn't bring wealth to the country. So it's ironic that people want to make Britain great again by doing the exact opposite of what made it quote unquote great in the first place, which is a big irony.
But if we really fuck it up and then in the short term I'm pessimistic, in the long term I'm quite optimistic. I think we'll fuck it up and then everything will come out all right again.
In many ways we agree, and we're saying that, but we have to it either dismantles itself because it doesn't work, or we preempt that and we say, oh, it's not going to work, and reject it. We need when people like Boris Johnson and you know, the Home Office say these awful things about migration and immigrants and, you know, the welfare state and, you know, working class people, we need to say this isn't right. And at the moment, there's not enough people saying this isn't right. There's people going, actually, it's not right. And there's this whole thing, people are saying maybe, oh, it's not right. And then they're going to the polling booth and they're not voting in the way that I would say protects people around them. I will say this, though, we have a terrible opposition. Literally, like, the Conservatives and maybe the right-wing interests are there for the taking. They're there for the taking. They're literally walking around with their pants around their ankles. And we're staring at them because we've got our pants around our ankles, you know? And it's a very bizarre time to... I mean, I don't know, you must be aware of the Labour deselection process.
Yeah.
At the moment. I mean, why is this even... Just put up with them for another 5 years, do you know what I mean? Like, is this really a priority? And I'm sure you've noticed that the MPs being deselected or after deselection are mostly female and minority. Yeah. You guys notice that? Yeah. So, you know, strange time to be into politics.
Well, it is, but that's the vacuum that's created in the middle by the weakness. But both parties are basically self-destructing, and it's just what's going to come. It's, you know, it couldn't happen at a worse time. It generally couldn't have happened at worse time.
No.
It's just that all these things that have happened in the last 10 years, there are all loads of things that have happened on basically 50-50, and if any of them had gone the other way, Corbyn winning was the only one that was like a landslide, but even he got in just out of sort of the politeness of... They'd say, oh, we always let these guys have a candidate. And, you know, so
right, isn't that funny? Yeah. But my show was basically, I did a whole chunk about Jeremy Corbyn. My theory about him is sort of like, great man, terrible leader. Very bad at getting people on side, because when you're a leader, you've got to make sacrifices. You can't have values that you go, these are my values, so my integrity will win. Because if people fundamentally don't agree with them, your integrity is just going to lose people, right? So you have to be more strategic. So I think he lacks that strategic kind
but
of approach to politics.
But don't the Conservatives do as well? So there's no compromise. No one's prepared to compromise, so everything's been pushed outwards to the
yeah, extremes. That's over Brexit, but generally, Conservatives will vote for the leader that will win them an election.
Yeah.
Brexit's kind of ruined it a little bit, but generally speaking, the Conservatives have never been that... They don't mind who is the leader as long as they win an election, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas on the left, we tend to be quite, no, we like this guy. It's like, yeah, but is he going to win your election? No, but we like him. He makes jam.
But
and
they think
I like
he will.
Jam.
They think he will. And to be fair, the last election, he did better than everyone thought. But he certainly did a lot better than I thought he would.
Oh, he did. And to be fair, just to be clear, I don't think he's unelectable.
No.
I just think his behaviour up to this point, the last few months have been very iffy, to say the least, which worries me.
He doesn't really want to do it. So it's sort of stuck in that. I don't really want to
do it.
It's
like Kevin Hart on the Oscars, like when he quit. He didn't want to do it, though. He didn't want to host the Oscars. He was like, oh, I'm not going to apologise. Oh, well, looks like I won't do the gig. No one wants that gig. I'll tell you right now, if they gave it to me, I don't want it. You know, I can say that because they'll never give it to me because of my emails.
I think those emails aren't there, but I want to see those emails desperately. So I'm very excited about the emails. Let's talk about your podcast,
yes,
Keeping
please.
Athena Company. This is because you've spent a lot of time with your one-year-old. You've got a podcast, which is not dissimilar to what I'm doing, to be able to have some adult conversations.
It started because, you know, 2019, to be a comedian, you've got to put out content.
You do.
But also because I just wanted to... I always think you've got to live your life in a state of forward motion. So I always wanted to do a podcast to just learn how to do it technically.
Yeah.
I thought just recording and editing and stuff like that. And I'm very privileged to just have met very interesting people who maybe for whatever reason don't necessarily get the chance to be amplified. Like, you do a podcast where you interview comedians, and that's great, but there's lots of comedians that do that. And I thought, I've got friends who are artists, I've got friends who are writers, I've also got friends who are comedians who do other things.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, let me think, and I made a list of all these people, like, who I knew, who I thought were amazing. And I thought, I've got to get these guys in my kitchen and fry them plantain. I fry them plantain. I'm going to enter the vegan awards next year and see if I get nominated for a vegan podcast of the year. fingers crossed. I've got this great new thing. It's called a podcast. Because I like awarding unoriginal things. But yeah, it's great. I do it mostly for me. And like a lot of podcasts, it's free content. I don't charge for it. I invest my own money in it, and I just do it because I enjoy it, and I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
And you have your baby with you in the...
Yes, because I have a childcare situation, which is basically precarious. So it's a lot easier to have her with me. And also it means I can be very technically bad with the recording because, the baby's crying. So it doesn't matter if there's a door swinging or if you can hear a fly buzzing or whatever. And that's also why I have the plantain going, so people are chewing and there's forks. So it is a good podcast. It's listenable. I think it's listenable. It's not like, you know, I wouldn't... Like, if I do a GoFundMe, don't put money in it. Like, if I have a Patreon, I wouldn't worry about that. But definitely it's listenable for free content. For free content, I think I do all right with it, yeah.
You're really talking it up. It's very good. I was listening to it today. But it's sort of adult. It's like adult interesting conversations. And again, about subjects that I guess, you know, with the great thing about the internet is you make your own content and you decide your agenda, and it's about things that I probably wouldn't make it onto mainstream TV.
Yes, yeah.
So that's where I think podcasting is very exciting and always has had that potential to be. You can literally do anything that's as niche or as, you know, or as stupid. I do a lot of very stupid podcasts that are a waste of people's time on purpose. Not this one. Or something that's not being covered elsewhere. And so you'd have this amazing power that is open to everyone, and there is this sort of democracy to it, which I think is
fantastic. Look, there's a... I always say it's an amazing privilege just to have your voice amplified and people staring at you and they listen to you. It's a real privilege.
Yeah.
And a podcast is an extension of that, because then you record it and it's there for eternity or until the world implodes. Yeah. I don't think podcasts will survive the nuclear war.
Yeah. Mine are in the British Library. In the vault, so that'd be fine.
All right, mine aren't. mine are not.
This one is, though.
Brilliant.
This will be
okay.
In, so you're saved.
So the
someone's just listening to this in 500 years' time going, this is what it was like.
Oh, brilliant. Good.
She seemed angry about bananas.
I didn't seem angry. I was angry. Record it properly, Richard. Your voice is amplified. And you're right, I do get to have people on my podcast that maybe wouldn't go on to a Radio 4 conversation. I've not been invited onto Women's Hour. Not that I'm bitter. but, you know, it's true. So it's a wonderful... social media is great because it removes the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And then if your stuff is good... it won't slip through the net. This is what I've discovered about comedy. If you're really good, you don't slip through the net.
Yeah.
I've decided that.
Comedy's quite, I think the problem with comedy in the 21st century is just too many people are trying to do it.
Yes.
The thing with comedy is you can't get away with, there's nothing you can do other than be funny in front of a crowd. You can have a night where you're not funny, and you can have a few nights where you're not funny. But if no one's ever found you funny, you can't be a comedian.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
right, yeah.
So it's that's again a very democratic thing. So partly it is, there's certainly different ways it operates, and audiences are prejudiced in different ways, and you'll get different audiences, different things. But if you're funny, you'll be able to be a comedian. So
absolutely, yeah. And maybe the level of comedian. You may not make it to Live at the Apollo. There were different levels, and you might be able to work, but you might not. You might not be able to get. Chris Rock had a name with a plane with his name on it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if I'm going to get a plane with my name.
I'm not even sure I'm going to get.
Unless I'm made. I don't know.
I've been waiting for. I've been doing it 30 years. I've been waiting for the plane, but
change your name to EasyJet and it'll be fine.
Okay.
EasyJet here. There were levels, but I do think generally week in, week out, on a daily basis, you can go out and entertain people and make them laugh and get paid for it if you're good. You won't slip through the net. So even though there are a lot of comedians, if you're good, you get to be good. I honestly believe that. I've not seen anyone not get booked because for some silly, frivolous reason. So that's why podcasts are great, and that's why comedy is great. And like I said, I feel very lucky to be able to do it, and I feel very lucky to also do my other job so I can live and eat and do all those things that are really cool as well.
Yeah. Are you going to go back to Edinburgh 2020? Is that the plan?
That's the plan. So I went up, when I did Follow the Leader, I was pregnant. So that was basically, the show was fundamentally about, that's how it works. I did not know. But I'm still smart. And 2020, now that the child's here, I don't know. I have an idea about a show. When I told people I was pregnant, I would tell them I was in the family way.
Right.
And it would just make them laugh loads. That's a lovely term, in the family way. So that was triggered lots of ideas for me for next year's show.
Okay.
The funny thing about my life at the moment is I've experienced about six different kinds of family in the space of a year. Like when I was pregnant, I was a single parent. And then I moved in with my mum, so I dealt with that. I had a communal kind of experience. I reconciled with my child's father, so then we were co-parenting, and now we're back together. So now we're like a nuclear family, okay. And I love that, the different emotions and the contrast between those things. And I think we think a lot, we dwell too much on the environment children are brought up in terms of the immediate environment, but actually we should dwell more on the social environment. Because if your social environment is right, you can have one parent, two parents, single-sex parents, a grandparent. But if the social environment is right, the family, that child will be catered for.
Yeah.
And I find that idea interesting, if not very funny. those are the ideas I'm having at the moment.
Well, yeah, but that's the stage you're at. Most people react at this stage is if you've got the idea, and then the rest hopefully comes along. But those are very interesting things to play around with. So I would look forward to that. Difficult going to Edinburgh with a kid, though. It's worse going with two.
Oh.
I had a fucking horrible time this year. Fucking hell. The 1 hour on stage was my only escape. I tried to persuade my wife. I was like, I'm doing a 14-hour podcast now, but she didn't believe me. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful thing.
That's what I want to hear.
It was wonderful. And just to see that, you can start taking them to shows.
Yeah, well, that's okay. She'll be one and a half, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll put her in the show.
Yeah.
I don't know. Stick her in a little cot.
I was thinking about bringing my kids onto this.
Yeah.
If my boy was running around the stage now, it would be the worst fucking thing. He's a nightmare.
Really? Yeah, but I just something's. I missed that.
He's a terrible prick.
He's a terrible.
He gets very hard time. He's the sweetest little thing you've ever seen. He wakes up in the morning. There's an old door that's been boarded up. They've got quite an old house, and there used to be doors between the rooms. And then his sister told him it was a prison through the door. And every time he wakes up, he goes, "Oh no!"
Oh, no, points. No. Oh my no. God! Your kids are adorable. So one hates you and lies to your son about them.
Yeah. He loves me.
Oh, he loves
me. He loves me at the moment.
Even though, but I'm going to tell him you called him a prick.
He is a prick. He's a really annoying little prick. But that's... I was telling him about Father Christmas today, so he was excited.
About how real he is.
Yeah, I was telling him all about Father Christmas. He was looking at this. We got three pictures of Phoebe with Father Christmas over, so when she was 2, 3, and 4, yeah, more or less. And the first time she's really scared, and the second time she's really crying, and the third time she's kind of happy to be with Father Christmas. So that's why he thinks Father Christmas is scary.
Right, until he's older.
I'm confirming that. We took a call from Father Christmas the other day.
Do you dress up as Father Christmas?
I don't know. That's
isn't that a wasted opportunity, guys? Don't you save that trip to the shopping centre.
Well,
just get a tracksuit.
Yeah.
It's fine. That's kind of not a compliment.
What, you don't like Father Christmas? No, that's what I was aiming. That's what I was going for.
That really hot guy.
He's pretty sexy.
Yeah, he goes around to people's houses and delivers stockings. Yeah.
Got a lot of presents though, Father Christmas. That's the thing. And that girls like that, right? They like a load of toys. This book is already... Look at how useless this Stranger Things book is. It's already falling apart. I was really excited because it had a little thing you could put your pen in, and that came off in the last podcast. Really ruined my last podcast. It's fallen apart.
You buy cheap, you buy twice. You want to get more skin, mate.
But it was expensive.
Was it expensive? How much was it?
Like £12 or something.
£12 for a notepad.
Stranger Things.
No Poundland.
Stranger Things looks like a video. It's amazing. So we're going to have to wrap it up because that time has come. But that was fantastic to meet you.
But I had so much more to say about white supremacy, guys. I had so much more.
We'll look forward to seeing you and see what happens next. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Vina Cableno.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest Athena Cubleno. Thank you very much to Pest for playing the music on this podcast. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre and everyone at Go Faster Stripe and everyone at Acast and everyone who knows me, especially my mum and dad. I'm indebted to my producer Ben Walker. I'm even more indebted to my executive producer Neil Redmond. He's a good guy. Not a bad guy at all. The stories you've heard about him just are not true. Let me tell you that he's a good fella. This is a Scarlet Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not head to GoFasterStripe.com to get downloads of many of my stand-up shows, my books, also the DVDs and downloads from all kinds of crazy-ass brilliant comedians. It's well worth supporting with your time and money. Thanks for listening. Now, fuck you. Fuck off.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show if enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.